Welcome back to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparable's only podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I am Scott McNulty, joined as always, or as often, by Mr. Jason Snell. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Scott. Good to be here. If you didn't see me earlier, that was because I was briefly cloaked.
Oh, yes, indeed. A faulty cloaking device, or I guess the device isn't faulty, but the installation, not up to snuff.
Looks like. This is, of course, we're talking about Star Trek Picard, Season 3, Episode 6, The Bounty, which may be a reference to the bounty, which is what they call the Bird of Prey in Star Trek 4.
Yes, and I think the evidence pointing to that is the fact that that ship appears in this episode.
Literally appears, is mentioned as the bounty, and then they steal the cloaking device from it.
Yes.
Because this is an episode that has... I can't wait to read the articles that detail all the Easter eggs in this episode. I fear that I haven't seen them yet because all the writers who are tasked to do articles about Star Trek Picard Easter eggs have died while trying to detail all the Easter eggs in this episode.
There are a lot of Easter eggs. They go to the Fleet Museum. They go to the Daystrom Institute. They're all chock-a-block, as they say, full of things that you will recognize. There are things that we've seen very quickly in the episode that are references to other things.
Yes.
Which I, of course, found delightful. Yes. So,
yeah. And they use some of it for character moments. Other stuff is just there for some sort of for plot reasons. And then, of course, stuff there for fun, just, you know, fun.
For funsies.
It's, in this episode. So Scott, how did you like this episode? It's our tradition to say this up at the beginning. I'm helping.
This is another episode that I enjoyed. I don't know if this is the best episode of the season. In fact, I probably would say it was not the best episode of the season. But it was good. It was nice to see Geordi reunited with everyone and, not wanting to be immediately on board and seeing all the ships and Moriarty briefly and all those things. So I enjoyed it. How about you, Jason?
I also enjoyed it. I think that it does a this is a difficult episode because it's a pivot point episode. It is an episode that is trying to be its own thing, which is like, oh, we're going to do a heist and we're going to need help and all that. But the truth is it's also a reset. Move characters around and reset the Jeopardy and reset the plan so that you can drive toward the end of the story. It's a change in acts. And so I think that that's hard. And I think that as a result, you know, an episode that's just sort of paying off a bunch of setup is always going to be more exciting than an episode that's setting things up. And there's a lot of setup here. But there's also, I think, a lot of great stuff. Not only the fan service-y reference stuff, but some of the plot stuff that does... Okay. They did that trailer, and I watched it. I didn't do a full media blackout. I watched the trailer, and there are stuff in the trailer that is, I feel like it was a mistake that lessened the impact of things in this episode, but there's also stuff in the trailer that was, I think, deliberately misleading that I actually really enjoyed when we got to this episode. So a little bit from A, a little bit from B, but some of the decisions here I thought were very interesting and clever. And I enjoyed especially about what Brent Spiner is doing, but also some plot, the big plot twist at the end, I thought was a pretty wild choice to make, to just embrace the, you know, things happening in earlier seasons of Star Trek Picard. So yeah, all in all, I thought it was really good, even though it's, you know, not going to be as light on its feet as something like the last couple of episodes where they've been able to have the, you know, huge kind of dramatic moments. They had to do some work here too. And Geordi, great to see Geordi. I feel like with Ro and you know, I think we've seen this a little bit in this show, you can feel the shorthand a little bit, which is they don't have a lot of time. And so they want to give a dramatic thing for Geordi where he is, you know, disappointed in his daughter, who is steering the ship instead of being an engineer. And so he's all grumpy and he's like, I'm not going to work with you guys. You're a bunch of jerks. And my daughter, you've wrecked everything and it's bad. And then, you know, by the end of the episode, they have like one conversation with him. And he's like, oh, I've changed my mind completely and it's fine. And it's like, it is not an unreasonable arc for Geordi to go on, but it's all done in very little time because the show doesn't have the time to do it more. And so part of me thought, maybe you should just not have Geordi be just so much of a jerk when he comes on. Like, I know you want to show him learn and progress, but what if he's already fine or close to it, right? What if he's just got one little nagging question instead of it being like, I haven't spoken to my daughter because she betrayed me by being a navigator, being right? Like, okay, whatever.
Well, I thought it was interesting, though, that he... Because, you know, when you're younger, you take more risks, generally speaking, because you have less to lose, right? Yeah. And so Geordi at this point in his life is, you know, a Commodore of the Starfleet Museum and or a Commodore and whatever he is at the Starfleet Museum. Yes. He's in charge of it. I don't know.
Curator. I don't know.
Who knows? He's just sitting there in his space dock.
He's fixing looking up. You know, Geordi's job is totally to fix up old spaceships so that they work right, right? Like, that's totally what his job is, which is great.
And he's very happy. Mm-hmm. And he's like, why, Jean-Luc, why are you bringing this to me? Why are you pulling me in? It's always about saving the galaxy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just want to tinker with the Enterprise.
I get that. It felt like they made it a little too extreme, given that they were going to solve it very, very quickly. But again, good to see Geordi. Glad LeVar Burton got to have those kind of moments with his kids, especially. Mm-hmm. And you know, if we remember Geordi from TNG, it was always like bumbling, doesn't know what to do with women and all that. And so to have him be here as a, you know, family man with his two daughters and trying to take care of them and you know, and married and all of that, like, that's all great. To
very self-assured.
And then, of course, the big reveal with Brent Spiner, we immediately, you get that moment where that's the power of the shorthand of having the track record of these characters, is we get scenes between Geordi and Data at the end, and it's like, oh, I haven't seen this in a long time, and I love it. It's great. That was great stuff.
Yeah, I think, do you think Brent Spiner has in his contract that he would do this again, but just don't put the makeup on me? Please.
My understanding is that that's what Michael Dorn did. They got him down to like 1 hour in the chair instead of 3 hours, and that was part of it. But I sort of think that was part of the deal, is that he was like, please don't, you know, I would like, and so I mean, we should talk about that. I think this is really clever. The trailer leads you to believe that maybe they find like a reassembled Lore, and that Lore is going to be a bad guy. What we get is a very different thing, which is that our friend ? Alton Inigo Soong from season one, who has apparently died, but before dying, he kind of went off because he gave his golem body to Jean-Luc. He went off and built another Soong type android, and he decided to sort of do a code merge.
Like a compilation tape of all the other Soong androids.
Yeah, it's a mixtape. It's a Noonien Soong mixtape. So it's Data and B4 and Lore and Lol. And maybe Soong himself. I don't know. Put kind of like smooshed together. And I think this is a really cool idea. So you get Brent Spiner with minimal makeup. He's got like the yellow eyes, but he otherwise is like an old man, like Brent Spiner actually is.
Yeah.
And Data has died, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer has died twice, and they hang a lantern on that. But this is not, like, what I like about it is it's not quite Data, right? It is Data
different.
Plus a bunch of other, this is a new person who has all of these different aspects, and it allows Brent Spiner to kind of do his own mental kind of like merge of all these different characters. And I have a hard time believing that it's going to remain sort of like flipping between them, that we're going to end up with a character who's sort of like Data but not Data, and a different kind of character. I think that's really fun. It's not what I expected at all. It gives Brent Spiner a chance to do his, like, I'm Data, now I'm B4, now I'm Lore, right? That sort of thing, which I think he enjoys. And he doesn't have to wear the white makeup anymore, although he does have holo projectors in his eyeballs, which is pretty cool.
That's quite the upgrade. I wonder if Picard has that.
Maybe. We'll just ask the Admiral to give us a PowerPoint presentation and see what happens.
That's right. That would be cool. Mm. I think I was not expecting... Well, I know I was not expecting that. And I was also... The trailer was a little misleading as well with our friend Moriarty, because it led you to, one, to believe that he played a larger part in this than he actually does.
That's why I would have left him out of the trailer, because I feel like the... the surprise would be great. And the fact is, it's not Moriarty, right? It's Data's subconscious. We get the first off, we get the crow or the crow. Whatever, mm-hmm. right? Which is like from his dream or from Sung's dream that the Data right,
from
sees.
That episode with the yeah.
Yeah, it's a TNG reference, and then mm-hmm. the pop goes the weasel, which is a reference to Farpoint, and then Moriarty, who is the intellect that was created for Data as a challenge, and this is all, you know, I get the sense because they're like, apparently this android has been like wired in as a security system for the station, sort of subconsciously. Which is weird, but I kind of feel like it's a weird place anyway. And they're like, well, it didn't work as an android, but we can kind of keep it running at a low level just as a security system.
There's a whole bunch of dangerous stuff in here, so we need to protect it with something equally dangerous.
And nobody will be able to hack this thing because, mm-hmm. except they can, of course.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. But it's an interesting idea. I enjoyed it. I enjoy the idea that this is that, and that Moriarty is there as a part of a manifestation of Data's memories. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yes, I enjoyed all of that, and I enjoyed them kind of, you know, bumbling about, they weren't really bumbling about the Daystrom Institute. We see a ferocious Tribble, Riker and Worf banter.
They do. I really like the moment where there's like a countdown to death.
Yes.
And everybody's freaking out, and Worf is just very calmly opening up the box and pulling the chip out and getting his mm-hmm. chip out and putting it in, and like everybody else is like, oh God, we're all gonna die, we got 10 seconds, Worf, hurry it up, and Worf's like, chill out everybody. And I love that little detail that Worf is like, he's calm, cool, and collected, it's gonna be fine. Everybody else is like a little bit on edge, and he's like, no, I'm just gonna take my time and do this right and all that. But the what's in the Daystrom Institute is bananas, right? Like the Genesis 2 torpedo is there. Mm-hmm. So I had predicted that Genesis might be involved. It's just an Easter egg. I was thinking maybe that's what they're trying to steal. But Scott, and there's an attack Tribble, which is fun, right? A murderous, yeah. a genetically altered Tribble that doesn't like Worf because he's a Klingon. But the one that I want to talk about, Scott, is why does... I don't know who the Daystrom Institute or is it Starfleet or is it Starfleet intelligence or I don't know why do they apparently have Captain Kirk's dead body?
Why do they have Captain Picard's dead body?
Well, okay, so what I admire about it is they are setting up the revelation, which is again bananas, and I love it. Revelation, which is it goes to our theories about like obviously what's going on here is something involving Jack and Picard doesn't have his body anymore, so they have to go to Jack.
Like,
and now we've got this moment where it's like, well, they took that's a great like Jean-Luc Picard. Oh, you're having an error. Reboot him, and it's like, no, they took Jean-Luc Picard, the dead body of Jean-Luc Picard, who is not in his body anymore. He's now a synthetic person, and so to set that up really in an Easter egg by saying we have lots of dead bodies of Starfleet legends here at this place. Jim Kirk's body's right over there, and then you know, maybe that was it. Maybe they have like the big Kirk Picard freezer wing of maybe the Daystrom station, and then they stole Picard. Well, what? Yeah, okay, they don't want Kirk, but they want Picard.
Show you our legendary captain wing.
Yeah, well, we're freezing them for the moment we may need to revive them and like bring them back to life
in a time of great peril.
Time of great peril. The zombie action squad will be called our adventures, the zombie captains, and they will return and be reconstituted, mm-hmm. and that will be I don't know, weird. I don't
very strange.
I don't know.
Didn't Kirk die in the Nexus? Did he not? I forget where he
died. No, he died back on the planet by falling off of a thingy because of mm-hmm. Malcolm McDowell in a kind of unceremonious way, right? Got
crushed by a gantry or something.
Yeah, exactly right. Fell off of a metal railing or something mm-hmm. and died.
Oh, my.
Yes, oh, my. So, but apparently what happened after that is that the Federation sort of swooped in, and while they're like
we'll take
getting
this.
People off the saucer section and all of that, they're like, Kirk's body, yes, get that, put that on ice. And take it
to
where.
You put it right next to Captain Pike. Yeah. So we have to assume Captain Pike is dead.
Pike. Well, I don't know. He was on Talos. They might not have been able to get him.
True.
But like Captain, like Archer. Like we got
Archer, he's in there.
We missed out on Zefram Cochran. He disappeared. We missed out on Pike. He disappeared. But we got like Archer down there, and you know, and then every
people are following around Janeway.
Yeah, I was gonna say every week or two somebody knocks on Janeway's door just to make sure she's still alive.
And, how are you feeling, Admiral?
Yeah, it's still good. Okay, I'll check back. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't understand why they have the bodies. Hopefully they will just not explain it because it's just weird.
I think they will explain about Picard's body, right? And I guess the implications of that will be for Kirk's body. And maybe the answer is it's extremely disturbing, but they felt like there was a need. I don't know. But
science.
Need
it for science.
Sure. Or maybe the answer is that because, I mean, this may all be very cleverly embedded. Like one theory is, you know, is it because of his Borg captivity and there's something about that that's interesting, or is it something genetic? But like maybe they wanted the body, you know, yes, he donated it for science, but what they really want to do is like take apart the Borg implants that might be left that couldn't have been removed before, or some other aspect of his body that was relevant that my guess is probably related to Jack, right? Because this is the Picard has a son, and that seems to be the motivating factor of this whole plot, is that they figured out that Picard has a son. Although I will say they're cutting it really close, since that parade that they're going to disrupt is in like a couple days, and they're still leaning on Vadic to bring them Jack Crusher. Like, you guys are running out of time. You should have been looking for Jack Crusher sooner, I guess.
Well, they're a small splinter group of changelings. They have a lot to do.
And they've been following him for a while, so I think they must have assumed that he was going to be easier prey than he's turned out to be.
Yes. And I mean, maybe they got the body and they thought, well, this is good enough. We don't need him.
Well,
and then they realized, oh, no.
I think that's it, right? I think they get Picard's body. They stole Picard's body and they're like, we got this. And they're like, oh, crap, this doesn't work. Well, he has a kid. Maybe that. Maybe we'll try that. So, yeah, we'll see. But I don't know. It's weird. I mean, what a bananas ending to an episode, which is to show the dead body of your lead character, who's also seeing his dead body. Whoa!
Yes.
What? Oh, that's good stuff.
It's weird in the best Star Trek way.
Yeah.
And one could say maybe, you know, a lot of weird things happen to Kirk and Picard throughout their career. They've been bathed in many strange energies and, you know, doused in nanobots and all kinds of stuff.
Maybe
so,
that's why they're on ice, is just, you know, for the research. I also wanted to mention, turns out Jack Crusher is a Star Trek fan. I thought that was
a
nice
Star Trek fan.
Nice touch.
He
he's like, oh, look at that. Constitution class. I love it. It's my favorite.
I know my dad was on
the Galaxy class, but whatever.
Nobody likes the fat ones.
No. So that was the USS New Jersey we see, which is a classic Constitution. It's literally the place and time of Terry Metalis' birth. It's NCC 1975.
Oh, that's sweet.
And he was born in New Jersey, and that's what it is. But they also have the Enterprise A, and he admires that one. And then you get the moment that you know is coming, but I got to say it, Scott, and I am not a big Voyager fan. I'm really not. But that moment where Seven calls up the Voyager and he's like, oh, that's a cool ship. What is it? And she has to like recount what it means to her. That got me. That was like, that was a really great moment of her talking about, you know, and it's about being crew, being family, and that she was reborn on the Voyager and all of that. And they play the Voyager music in the background after having previously played like every ship gets its own theme song at the Fleet Museum.
It's great.
Yeah. Amazing. That was good stuff.
One assumes you just pair your Bluetooth to the Fleet Museum, and then as you're looking, it plays the music, the appropriate music.
I think
like
that's right.
Audio
tour. As you move from room to room, the appropriate theme music. Actually, I was going to say, I'm not sure they're, I mean, are they just like looking at the Fleet Museum CD-ROM or something when they're there? Because she's just got an interface with all the different exhibits.
She just pushing the level. I think it must, you know, it's like when you go to a museum with your phone, some museums have the thing with like a QR code. So they scan the QR code when they got there.
I think that's what it
and
is.
It brought up the interface and she can just cycle through.
That's right. That's right. Scan the Fleet Museum. Oh, I'm picking up a QR code. Well, put it on the screen. And then it's, you know, she's just tapping the buttons to look at all the different exhibits. It's it's a fun, but it's a really, it's a fun scene. And the bird prey from Star Trek IV again, which actually factors into the plot, but I thought that was a really fun moment. There is also a classic Klingon destroyer from the original series that's there near the Bird of Prey, which is also fun. Not sure the scale works there. I think the Bird of Prey is supposed to be a lot smaller than a lot of these ships,
but you know,
I don't know.
I enjoy, as a fan of Star Trek starships, just like Jack, I very much enjoyed it. I was like, why don't we just spend some more time cycling through the rest of the ships and see what we see there?
I just want to go on the tour. Do we have to leave? Yeah, exactly.
I guess you have a ticking clock, although you do spend a lot of time talking to people. there's not a, you know, I enjoyed this episode, but this is another situation in which people have like, they have, what, like an hour or something like that. And they spend a lot of time just kind of talking to each other.
Hanging around,
not really doing much of anything.
Yeah, it's Will and Worf and, what, Raffi are all on the station that's surrounded by Federation ships. Yeah.
Just chatting away.
And Geordi is like, I don't know, Jean-Luc, you know, my daughter, our relationship is complicated.
Yeah, fatherhood is tough.
Geordi. They're in peril right now, but we gotta slow it down a little bit. Just gotta slow it down.
And I mean, I enjoyed it, but I was just thinking in the back of my head, like, you guys should, you know, put a little pep in your step here. Yeah. Come on,
a little. Well, I mean, we talked about this last season. That Patrick Stewart's not gonna run for you.
His pep is.
He's
not...
a very old man. He's just gonna sit in a chair and talk to you. Okay, that's capable of doing. It's fine. Yeah. It is fine. He's great. But like he's not. I actually read. It's funny because we were talking about that in that exciting chase scene and at the end of season two of Picard, where Picard is very very slowly walking through the basement of his mansion and they are chasing after him, but he's still just very slowly walking. And then I read a story. There was an interview with him that mentioned that in season one, he actually goes up the staircase in the back of La Serena to get to the bridge. And and they shot that scene. And then he went over to the producers and said, I'm never walking up a staircase on camera ever again. So it made me laugh because I thought of the very slow chase that happens in season two. And it's like, look, he's an old man. He's a legend. Don't make him do stuff like that. We don't need to see him as the action hero. Have some other people do that, but
we just need to see him talk to people and do drive-by wisdom.
Yeah, exactly. Which he's so good at.
Endearing and annoying. To quote Seven of Nine.
Yes, I enjoy that Jack has that moment again. Again, some of this is shorthand because there is only so much time to do this. We don't have years for these characters to progress. But I do enjoy that Jack has that moment where he says, "Okay." Not only does he admit being a Star Trek fan, essentially, but then he admits he's like, okay, I also got a bunch of, you know, I got a bunch of good stuff from my mom. I have to give credit, having met Picard, that there are things in my, and which I think rings true, right? Which is like having met my father that I've never met before and gone, oh yeah. And like seeing things in yourself that you realize are reflected from that. Right. Like I thought that was kind of charming because before he's like, no, I don't, just my mom and me and we have adventures and I don't need you, stupid Picard. Mm-hmm. And now he's like, oh yeah, I see it. Mm-hmm. Which is great. Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah, it is. And it is, you know, I think it's all one of the big themes of this episode is kind of your, once again, legacy and what you pass down and all of that. So
expectations for your children, right? Which Geordi is grappling with because he's got the one daughter who works with him at the Fleet Museum, I guess.
Who looks so happy.
Yeah. But the other daughter is just like, I'm flying and sometimes crashing spaceship. Oh,
it is awesome.
Yeah. We should also mention that playing against character, we get the great moment where Shaw, who looks at Picard and Riker like he stepped on a piece of gum. He meets Geordi because we know he was a grease monkey from Chicago, right? He's an engineering guy. He meets Geordi and he's like, oh my God, it's Geordi. Oh my God. It's so great because it's so against what you expect Shaw to do. And that's all he really does in this episode. But oh, it's so good.
That's worth it.
Right? Oh, it's Geordi. Yes. I can't believe it.
And Geordi's like, your ship is held together with 21st century duct tape or something like that. And
I'd like to talk about with you more, and maybe we will later. Wink. But right now we've got other work to do. And he's like, whatever you say, Jordy. All right, okay, whatever.
However, how can I help? What can I do, Jordy?
What can I do?
So just go over there.
Yeah. Stand in the corner, Captain. Right. Well, the grown-ups are talking.
That's right. Nobody really cares that you're the captain of this ship.
No, he'll have his moment, I think. I think Shaw.
I think he will. They're setting him up to save the day, I think.
Somebody in one of our Slacks that we're in suggested that there's going to be a moment in one of these last episodes where everybody's like, oh no, what are we going to do? And Shaw's going to be like, well, we're going to do this. This is the thing to do. It's totally reasonable. And they're all going to be like, oh yeah, right. You're a competent Starfleet captain. Let's do it. And then he's going to be like, aha, Shaw is here for a reason.
Finally,
listening to him. He's been right all along, but now they listen to him. Liam Shaw will have his moment, but not yet. He's just fanboying about Geordi.
Excited. Yes. And I would be excited about Geordi as well.
Sure.
No hate there.
You know, the one moment that I wanted in that very nice scene where Geordi is talking to his daughter at the end about the expectations and wanting her to be safe and all of that. Mm-hmm. What I really wanted is him to say, you know, when I started on the Enterprise, I was the pilot, right? I only became an engineer later. I understand, right? Because they didn't go there, but it's like that's the truth of the show is that Geordi was on the bridge and they moved him to engineering in season two because they didn't have a real chief engineer character in season one. So I thought that would have been a fun little moment, which is like, Geordi, you were flying the ship.
You did the
in
same
season
thing.
One and then became an engineer. So say, I get it. I flew the ship too. I changed careers, mm-hmm. but, you know, I get it. But that we didn't get that, but still, it was a nice scene.
It could be ahead of us.
It could be.
Who knows?
It could be.
I did like when she said, well, I spent my entire life listening to the stories of your adventures, and now I want to have my own.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, it's dangerous.
I really appreciate that. And that echoes the stuff with Jack, too, right? Which is the oh, yeah, I heard the stories. And Beverly, you know, I would always tell the stories. And it's like that is acknowledging in a fun way, like the audience, and also saying like, well, yeah, the people, I always like it when people in the show have seen the show. Right?
Right,
like they also have seen the show. Sometimes you get these characters. It's like, have you seen Star Trek? Do you know what's going on here? I really do like it when a character is bright enough and plugged in enough. They're like, you know, like because Geordi's daughter could tell you chapter and verse about all seven seasons of Star Trek: The Next Generation. Right, like she's got it down. Clearly, she's heard all the stories. She's seen the show. It's good.
Yes. The big shocking reveal. So they are, it's not very shocking at all, but they're on the Daystrom Institute. They take Data, Lore, Lol, whatever they're going to call them.
Zoom-type Android amalgam thing. Yeah.
But not everyone gets beamed aboard the Titan safely.
Riker is taken, mm-hmm. conveniently, since they seem to have a hostage for Riker. Now,
or do they, is the question.
Yes.
He's taken, and it turns out it's Vedic, and she takes him to Shrike, and he's like, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to betray my friends for you. And she says, no, you're not, but you will betray them for this person. And then it is Deanna Troi.
Deanna Troi.
Or is it,
in no context? Yeah, I did have that thought, which is it's very convenient if Riker's the one they capture and they've got Riker's loved one in the brig, and maybe, you know, they have other loved ones in the brig too, and it's like whichever one we manage to get. But I do have that thought, which is we have not yet had one of those, oh, this person we thought was our character is actually a changeling posing as them. And so I wonder about that with Deanna. Although I also wonder about if there's a scenario where having captured Will, they then try to
replace him,
duplicate him instead. I don't know.
One of those things is going to happen, I think. We'll find out.
You can't have changelings and then not have the old changeling switcheroo thing happen, right? You got
to
have
that. You need to have it. You got to have
it. I think you got to have it.
And I don't know. I don't quite understand why Vedic kills those two other security guards, but I guess they're not changelings, so she just kills them.
Yeah, I think she must have swapped with one of the security guards on the station in order to get to the people. And then once she was there, she knew she had to kill the security guards so that she could then spirit Riker away to the Shrike. I think that's the idea there.
And interesting moment in this episode to super nerds in that founders do not hurt other founders. And yet Vedic just kills one of her crew members kind of mercurially.
Yeah. And I mean, Riker has a line about like they, you know, poured you guys into a big pulp bowl or whatever it was, which is funny. But I also have this question about like, I don't know. They may have more to say about who these changelings are, because they seem to be very far off the path. If they are even, because they're modified, right, or they're evolved or whatever. So there's a question of like how
they're meaty.
So maybe they have very different standards and they're very, very different kind of creatures. And it actually makes me wonder, you know, if the right thing to do here after you save the day at the parade is go to the Gamma Quadrant and talk
to the Great Link.
Go to the Great Link and say, can you clean up this mess? And because I would assume they'd be like, well, yes, those people are bad and they need to, you know, right? But I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with that. But the point is, you got to stop the plot first, right? This plot is in motion. By the way, we get a very good plot point in this episode, which is that, which I think as an IT manager, you might like and also dislike, which is one, all the starships talk to one another now, which is actually a little resonance from Prodigy, right? Where the plot there is about a thing that infects all of the starships. So you got it here, which is like on one level, it like makes sense that that would be a kind of a thing that you would want your starships to do is talk to each other. However, it also means that they're all vulnerable, which is, I assume, what's going to happen at the parade, at the Frontier Day. And also, I think to myself, where would there be a collection of older starships that don't have that connection?
I don't know.
Where could we find some old starships to fly?
Well, that was immediately, once she said, oh, this is fully integrated into the fleet, I thought, well, they need a new ship. And the Enterprise is right out there. Enterprise A, take it.
It's literally right there, right? The Enterprise A and the Defiant. I mean, like, take and the USS New Jersey is there if you want to do that too. That was a sly reference too, because in Relics, the Next Generation episode with Scotty, when Picard finds Scotty on the holodeck sitting on the bridge from the original Enterprise, and says Constitution class, and Picard says there's one in the Fleet Museum. And so there it is. The USS New Jersey is the one in the Fleet Museum, the original Constitution class. That was like paying off a reference from 30 years ago, which is what the show is all about, quite frankly.
It is true.
Although I did it's Kirk's Enterprise and it's the Defiant. And it's like, well, they're the replacements for the ones that got destroyed, but
exact replicas.
Sure, good enough, right? Like we can't. Like there's no Kirk's original Enterprise burned up on a planet that itself burned up, right? So they're not getting that one back. Mm-mm. They've got Kirk's other Enterprise and his skeleton. So, you know,
that's all you need, really.
Right, just add water.
And I was expecting them to hop into one of those ships in this episode. So it was fun that they just stole the cloaking device from the Bounty and let off. Because I think you're right. They're going to clearly come back and get those ships,
right?
And do something. And I also enjoyed the fact that Geordi was like, Jean-Luc, I'm so busy. I've been writing a memo to Starfleet about not putting all the ships in one place for this parade.
Yeah, it's a bad idea. And I'm like, yeah, okay, Geordi. Well, let me tell you, the changelings don't care. The changelings dragged your email right into the trash can.
I said, okay. Spam. Block.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. He's just like on report. Like, stop sending us emails.
That's right. Nobody cares about your museum, Commodore.
No. So, fun episode, packed full of stuff, and definitely getting us to think about what's coming next. Worf and Raffi come on board, and that happens. It's fun, and we get that fun line where Worf's like, oh, well, you know, I prefer a path of nonviolence, and Riker's just like, we're all going to die. That's right.
And he's this later, I was like, I don't understand the world anymore.
Yeah, that was all fun.
Sour mead is also
right, making good fun of Picard's wine. That's also good. And a little nice awkward moment between Rafi and Seven where Worf is like, dealing with relationships is difficult. I'm like, oh my God, what
Don't
is
worry,
going
I've
on
been
here?
To combat with many former lovers.
Yes. Love
I'm not coming. Good is so, never a good idea.
Yeah, so good. So good. So, yeah, low-key comedy in this show. It's good.
Michael Dorn had a good interview with somebody, I forget who, recently, where he basically said when early on when he started playing Worf, he decided that Worf can be funny, but he's never trying to be funny.
Yes.
And he doesn't think that he is funny. So he's always playing it straight, which is, I think, an incredible insight from that early time when Michael Dorn was trying to figure out who Worf is, because it has paid off so many times over the years.
Such a fun character. Yes. I mean, it's obviously not true in this show because beheadings are on Wednesdays. It's not a, I don't think he's being serious there.
Little joke every once in a while.
But that's the whole point. Like the comedy of Worf is that Worf just is so serious, right? And everybody else is like, what? Like, what? And it's like, that's the joke. It's Worf who takes it all seriously, okay? That's the beauty of it. There is no honor. Like, yeah, even when he's about to die, he says, it was a good day to die. It's like, he's not going to die, but still, what a great line. So yeah, it was good. I mean, it's not, Rafi and Seven breakup happens off camera. We don't really know what's going on with that, but I'm glad they had a fun scene that tipped to the awkwardness of it.
Yes, maybe. Well, I'm sure we will explore a little bit of that when, no doubt, some time-based peril is inching ever closer and they decide to have a heart-to-heart about their relationship.
Right. We only have 10 minutes to fix this thing. Let's have a conversation now.
Yes, let me, as I operate on this photon torpedo, let's talk about our feelings.
This episode does have all the cast members of Star Trek The Next Generation in it, though.
Yes, they don't. So they aren't all in the same place.
Yeah,
but they're getting there.
But they're all on the show now, so that's good. That's good. We're getting there.
And it only took 6 episodes to get there. Answering my question on our very first episode about how long it would take to get everyone, at least on the show, they aren't in the. I assume next episode, they will all be in the same place by the end of it. But
probably. But I think it's, because they're going to have to, in the next episode or two, they're going to have to all be together and then ride off to their big climactic.
One assumes two-part ending.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't mind waiting, right? I like giving everybody their moments. And so Geordi gets his moments in this episode as he's brought back in, not just with his family, but like I said, really touchingly, with Brent Spiner having that instant remember Geordi and Data and their connection and their best friendship and all of that. And
moment when Brent Spiner smiles and is Lore, you're like, oh yeah, that's Lore.
Yep. And don't forget before, which was great. They had the head. They had the head. Apparently, they actually got. They were like, oh yeah, Paramount. We have the B4 body part props, and they're like, bring them over. Like we that's great. And so you've got kind of younger Brent Spiner head, and torso or whatever that's from Star Trek Nemesis. Throw that in the mix too. That was. That's good fun. I love
Daystrom
that.
Institute is just like Paramount's prop.
Yeah, I think that's
warehouse
it.
Full of everything.
I think, including, except Scott, that implies that that Lucille Ball's body is somewhere in the Paramount prop. Right. We save the bodies of all of our stars in case we need to reconstitute them later.
I wouldn't put it past them.
Disturbing. Very, very disturbing. Lucille Ball.
We're just waiting for the technology to get there. The digital. Artificial intelligence Lucille Ball is coming, and she will protect the warehouse.
But she will. She will from all. I saw that movie with Lucy and Tezzi, right? Like,
I didn't see that, but she was a formidable person.
It's not very good, but yeah, she was very formidable. That's true.
And Star Trek related, of course, which is why you brought her up. I know, but
it's true.
For the younger listeners, we would not have Star Trek without Lucille Ball.
It's true. Just like there was that story about how Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I think, only exists because of Dolly Parton. Lucille Ball is the reason Star Trek exists, because Desilu was the original producer of the show, and it was Lucille Ball who took a chance on genre TV when nobody else was doing it for both Star Trek and Mission Impossible. And crazy. And that is and it basically bankrupted her, and she had to sell the studio to Paramount. But she's the reason that Star Trek exists. So that's why they got to keep her frozen, because you never know when you're going to need Lucille Ball back or Captain Kirk.